Peter Callahan is a reporter for MinnPost, where he covers state government. He's with us today to talk about the race for governor in Minnesota. Peter,
Peter, what do you know?
Peter, thanks for being with us.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
Well, you've written some articles recently about the differences in the candidates, and I'd kind of like to start there for Minnesota governor. How are Republican Jeff Johnson and Democrat Tim Walz different when it comes to schools and education?
Well, I think if you would Tim Walz in the education establishment category, and I mean that by kind of what the people who make decisions about schools right now, teachers, administrators, school boards, he is sort of, I think, supportive of the way things are going right now, but does recognize that there are certain schools in certain parts of the state that are struggling. And he talks about something called complete schools, which is a concept where you would move social service delivery into the individual schools and kind of put those things together. One of the things he talks about is kids don't come to school in pieces. They come as a whole. And that's really, I would say, the heart of his education proposal. Jeff Johnson is what used to be called an education reformer. Before that got kind of mushed up in the argument by the adults. But he is school choice. Even school vouchers, a supporter of charter schools, even in areas, say, North Minneapolis and areas of St. Paul that are struggling, he is not necessarily for putting more money into those schools. He is for changing things up, giving something he calls the parent trigger, where if school performance is low enough, parents could vote to change the administration of their school, change it to a charter school, things like that. So definitely one is kind of more reform libertarian, and the other is more traditional, that we need to deal with the social problems that some kids come to school with.
And another issue they have disagreed with, it has to do with immigration. How would you characterize their positions there?
Well, Johnson is very similar to Tim Pawlenty. The two of them were alike on that. They are critical of concepts of sanctuary state, sanctuary cities, what are called separation ordinances in some of the cities that do not allow, in fact, require police to not inquire about the immigration status of people that they deal with during the day, either people reporting crimes or people perhaps suspected of crimes, not cooperating with ICE once they have people in custody. Walz supports that, as did the other DFL candidates. Johnson definitely opposes that, and he's trying to make that something of a wedge issue with Walz in the campaign. And you also have the concept of how many refugees Minnesota accepts. Minnesota's had a tradition and a history of being very open to refugees, either through religious groups or other nonprofits. Johnson wants to put a halt to that, something that the state can't necessarily control, but he says the first day of office, I will go to D.C. and ask them to stop sending refugees to the state.
Hmm. Wow. Okay. We're talking to Peter Callahan from MinnPost. It seems like Johnson is also working hard to make guns a wedge issue between the two of them. Tell us more about that, about how he's characterizing Walz and his changing position.
Yeah, that's interesting, because Pawlenty was definitely sort of canting to the middle on that during the primary, and I saw that falsely, as it turns out, as evidence that he had polling that we didn't have, that saw him surviving the primary and needing to make some appeals to perhaps suburban voters, suburban women voters, who were concerned about gun violence, particularly in schools. Johnson took a much more absolutist position. No further restrictions on gun ownership, background checks, red flag warnings. He says none of that works, and what we need to deal with instead are these systemic cultural problems, particularly with young males who see violence as a solution. He even talks about video games and things like that. Walz was pretty close to the other DFLers in the primary, and actually closer to Pawlenty on some of these issues. He supports red flag warnings for people who maybe shouldn't have guns, court adjudication to take away gun rights for people like that, background checks, things like that, ban on bump stocks, some of the things you've been hearing about. And what Johnson criticizes him for is that when he was running in a, let's say, a more gun permissive culture of the first congressional district, he was an NRA A-plus recipient. He took donations from the NRA. And what Johnson sees is a politician who has changed constituencies, meaning now I'm running statewide. I can't take those types of positions and do well in the cities, for instance. And he sees it as a cynical ploy. Wall says, I've seen the NRA change, and I've seen gun culture change, and I've seen what's going on in schools, and that made me change my position.
Okay, well, Peter, yesterday you had an article about an event earlier this week where we can read the closing remarks from the candidates, and they've tried to maintain a civil tone. Their closing remarks were about each other. What do they think of each other? How are they portraying or attacking or being nice to each other?
Well, I don't think it's a ruse or a put on that they get along very well. I watch them before and after forums, for instance, when there's no necessary reason for you to be chatty and smiling and laughing with one another. So I think that is honest and sincere, and I think it has something to do with the personalities of these two people. Tim Walz, if you've ever met him, is a fellow well met. I mean, he's very friendly, very gregarious. He's the football coach and the high school teacher. Jeff Johnson has been an attorney, but he's also been the one vote in a 6-1 DFL majority on the Hennepin County Commission. He can either complain and give speeches, which he does to some degree, or he can see if there's some areas where he can work with that majority of DFLers, which he does. And he does both. And when he gives the one vote against something, say at property tax levy increase, he gives kind of what the speech, and he says, I'm going to give the speech now, and it's all very polite and very civil. I mean, I think that's part of his personality. But Jeff Johnson is a conservative Republican, and Tim Walz is a mostly liberal, sometimes liberal to moderate DFLer. They are in very different parts of the political spectrum. And Jeff Johnson has also decided that he is not going to try to moderate positions to appeal to an independent voter or a center voter. He's going all in on conservative positions, and he's going all in as a Trump supporter. So that makes the contrast very stark.
So let's talk a little bit about what polls have been showing and how candidates use these polls right now when there's still some time before November 6th and the voting. You had an interesting writing on that, because in my mind, I would think if you're ahead, you would think you would tout that so much, but they still got to get people to the polls.
Yeah, and they got to get people to give them money. The article I think you're talking about is just for fun. I went in and looked at the appeals that campaigns make to their donors, particularly their small dollar donors. And these are usually email, sometimes text messages. And while those dollars are important, particularly with the state matching, what they're trying to do is get numbers of supporters up. And so if you give them $3, that's cool. If you give them $25, that's great. But if you give them $3, they're going to ask you for $3 more every couple days. And the way they appeal to them that I found was, oh, my God, we're behind. Oh, my God, the other side's catching up. You really want Jeff Johnson to be governor? If you don't, then you need to send us another $10. And the flip side of that was the candidates who were behind kind of needed to buck up their supporters by saying, hey, there's this glimmer right here, and hey, there's this little bit of information from a poll that shows that we've really got a chance if you help us, because the last thing they want is to be a lost cause and have people go away, and the last thing that the leaders want is for you to think this is over, I'm going to spend my money on closer races.
Yeah, that's right. You were showing how Senator Tina Smith and Karen Housley and how that race is playing out in those terms.
Is there much dark money behind the governor's race, both on either side? We've seen here in the 8th District in northern Minnesota some pretty nasty ads paid for by outside money sources for our congressional race between Pete Stauber and Joe Radinovich. Is there much dark money behind these guys?
Sure. Let me define dark money first.
Sure.
What I see is dark money as from post-Citizens United-type committees that do not have to report their donors.
Yes.
To me, that is dark money, and I do not see as much of that in the state races as we've been seeing in the congressional races, as you just referenced. What I am seeing a lot of, and we will see more of, and we'll get a report next Wednesday to see how that has changed since the last report, is independent expenditure money. So I can set up a committee. I can tell you to vote for and against a certain person. I just can't coordinate with the candidate. And the beauty of independent expenditure campaigns, to be slightly facetious, is I'm not capped on what the donation limits are.
Oh. Okay.
As I am capped, if I want to give money directly to Tim Walz, I'm capped at $2,000 primary and $2,000 in the general. If I want to give money to an independent expenditure campaign, I can give them $100,000 or $200,000, and we've seen those size donations going into these. Secondly, it's easier and less damaging to the candidate for the negative messages to come from an independent expenditure campaign. Because then the candidate can say, boy, I had nothing to do with that.
Yeah, well, do they ever actually disavow them and say, don't pay any attention to that? Or are they kind of glad that's being spent on their behalf, even though it's not coming directly from them?
It depends on what the public reaction to the ad is.
Oh, okay.
I mean, if it's really blown up and been ugly, then I've seen them say, yes, this is just not the kind of campaigning that I support. But what are you going to do? They're independent from me.
Uh-huh.
And you will also get the target of the ad calling on the opponent to disavow and all that. So there will be that press release that will come out. Why isn't Tim Walz telling Alliance for a Better Minnesota to stop lying about my record? You'll see that.
I see. Well, we're speaking with Peter Callahan. Peter's a reporter for the online news service MinnPost. He covers state politics for MinnPost. And before you go, Peter, Heidi, you said you have you're interested in opposition research.
Well, yeah, because there's such intrigue with not just candidates running, but the campaigns and the campaign workers in this whole dramatic time going on. And you took a look at what that job is like, because there's always. Well, explain what it means, opposition research, first of all.
Well, opposition research is broader than what I directly wrote about, which is a job called the tracker. And the tracker is the person who trails, follows, sleuths out the opposing candidates with a video camera and usually stands in the back of the room and records everything that is said and done. And then they see if there's some difference in position. They see if there's a gaffe. If they do, you'll be sure that's going to show up on a television ad, or sometimes they try to get the material to a political reporter and see if they'll write a story about it. Both sides do that now. It's a piece of opposition research. So while the tracker is out in the back of the room video recording, there are people back at headquarters pouring through court records, pouring through votes, looking at old news clips to try to see if there's something they can use against a candidate in the campaign.
I remember a campaign back in the 70s, and I believe it was in one of the eastern states, where the opposition research found out that the opponent of their candidate actually matriculated at a university, and they threw out this big word, matriculate, in knowing that most of us, including me, weren't sure what it meant, but it sounded bad.
Well, that they could have found that more likely what happened is you said you matriculated, but you actually didn't matriculate.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Find that out.
You can read Peter Callahan's work at minpost.com. Peter, it was great to talk to you today.
Hey, good to talk to you guys.
Thanks a lot.